Bibbles and Bo-Tittle-Tay. Stars all winking while they play. Nibble, nabble, fluff-a-fi. Close your eyes, the world says hi. Wobble wee and twizzle toes, nighttime whispers soft and low. Schnibble, schmabble, doogle die. Sleep awakes beneath the sky. Mumble, wibble, tumble near. Dream bugs hum right in your ear. Blipple, bopple, tickle, twee. Hold your breath and count to three.
We interrupt your evening's broadcast with breaking news from the KNXR newsroom.
Regarding a murder, the death of Myretta, June Jones, a private investigator revisits an old murder, one that impacted him directly when he was a child. It was November 18, 1947. I had just turned 8 and was in the 3rd grade at Wayside Elementary School, in the southern edge of Bakersfield. Every day, my younger brother and I walked the 3/4 of a mile from our house in the Southgate area to the school. To avoid walking along the busy Casa Loma Highway, we crossed the irrigation canal on a narrow cement bridge 100 yards south of the highway. It was near there that the grisly event occurred. A kindergartner, a 5-year-old girl, was murdered the night before, battered innumerable times, the radio said, with a hammer. Every time the radio retold the story, a new set of shivers would go up and down my spine. I was afraid, pee in your pants afraid. To make matters even more fearful, she was murdered in our pretend pirate's cave, just steps from the concrete bridge across the irrigation canal. We had played in it often, sometimes spending all day there.
I am a trained criminal investigator who has conducted many interrogations. I know the tricks, techniques, ruses, and roles that investigators employ to obtain a written confession. Some members of the public believe that during a confession, an individual voluntarily tells a coherent and complete story, including all the pertinent details. They do it, folks believe, because they have a guilty conscience and need to bare their soul. However, from my experience, that is almost never the case. Every investigator I have ever known goes into each interrogation with a theory about what happened. It is that prior theory that guides the interrogation. In the interview room, they query, probe, pressure, confront, cajole, baby, accuse, misstate, scream, beg, starve, terrorize, lie, and sometimes even tell the truth in order to gain as many specific details as they can. Details are an investigator's best friend. Big general lies are easy to disprove. What is logarithmically harder is a coherent and believable story with details. More details increase credibility. Ever more specific details enhance credibility even more. In any interview, the investigator is seeking details, which taken together either confirm or disconfirm the theory that the investigator already has. As an experienced crime investigator, I can tell from the pattern of questions what the investigator's theory about the crime is. As I read and reread Wanda Evans's confession, I can clearly see the theory in which the 1947 investigators believed. Unfortunately, as I now look at that theory, I can see that in most respects, it was completely wrong. The Bakersfield investigators had 2 theories to explain the murder of the kindergarten girl. One was that Wanda Evans suffered from extreme mental illness. Wanda's father is quoted in the newspapers claiming that she was paranoid, always acting strange, he said. In response to this theory, the court ordered Wanda Evans to undergo extensive psychological evaluation at the nearby Camarillo State Mental Hospital. Wanda spent 3 months undergoing psychiatric evaluation. It was discovered that Wanda had endured serious brain trauma as an infant. Still, she was eventually found to be dull-witted, but sane. The second theory was the one that was invoked in her harsh sentencing. Wanda Evans was deemed a lesbian predator who had sought to seduce the tiny kindergartner. The key to this theory was that Wanda had ordered Myretta June to take off all her clothes. The 5-year-old was found beaten and naked. Again and again, the original investigators returned to this theory, pressuring Wanda about playing with herself and asking whether she enjoyed watching naked children. It is this theory, I now see, is, as without basis, a complete falsehood. Let me be very clear. I now believe that 13-year-old Wanda Evans invited Myretta June to the Pirate Cave, and that Wanda knew it was a place beyond adult purview or control. I believe that the young kindergartner became frightened and began screaming very loudly for her grandmother. I believe Wanda panicked, picked up a rock, and hit Myretta June multiple times. She did so, I now believe, because Myretta June was screaming. I now believe, as her defense attorney did, that Wanda Evans was in a complete panic, but she wholly lacked the decision-making skills to consider either consequences or other alternative courses of action. She was, by all accounts, a young woman suffering from a developmental mental delay. However, I do not believe that Wanda Evans was a lesbian sexual pervert or a pedophile. She was not attempting to recruit the younger girl into her own deviant lifestyle. In the long and intense interviews, the investigators kept returning to a theme: Wanda's purported enjoyment from playing with herself. The investigators clearly believed that Wanda had targeted Myretta June as a potential sex partner. "Wanda," they said again and again, "we know that you play with yourself. We have medical evidence from the doctor that you do. We also have medical evidence that you played with Myretta June." Wanda admitted to brutally murdering Myretta June, but she never admitted to female masturbation. "I never did that. That was bad. I didn't do that." Finally, the investigators broke Wanda. She admitted that she may have touched Myretta June down there. I now believe that the original investigators got it wrong. Really wrong. I think the evidence shows that Wanda also had been the victim of sexual violence. Someone had demanded that she take off all her clothes and then perform sexual activities. I have taken university courses on identifying and treating victims of child sex abuse. Wanda, to my mind, is a classic victim of this type of crime. I do not believe that the abuse was a one-time event. I believe it happened many times. Each time that it happened, she felt afraid, vulnerable, powerless. There was nothing she could do. She was humiliated, terrified, and forced to be submissive. Terrible things happened to her, were done to her, yet she could not stop it. She was small and weak, in every way a victim. My theory of the crime is very different from the original investigators. I would not be looking for an aggressive lesbian knifomaniac seeking to lure young girls into her immoral web. No, for me, this was not a sex crime. Rather, I think it was about power. Power that Wanda Evans never had. When Wanda was abused, humiliated, forced to submit, She felt small and powerless. In the pirate cave, the small Wanda suddenly felt large compared to the very small five-year-old. In the cave, a place where adults never ventured, a place where no one could see in, Wanda held absolute power. Everyone, particularly the small Myretta June, had to do what Wanda said. Wanda was in power. Now she would show someone else what it felt like to be humiliated, powerless, afraid, unable to resist, compelled to follow orders. Wanda was in power. Take off your clothes. Do what I tell you. I am in charge. At first, Myretta June objected, but powerful Wanda pulled her hair and hit her hard with her fists. You will comply with my orders. I am the powerful Wanda. I can do anything I want.
Snorable whimsy dungly, moonlight dances on the sea, piddle paddle whipple woo, dreams are waiting just for you. Zimble zamble tittle tay, stars are winking while they play, nibble nabble fluffify, close your eyes, the world says hi. Wobble wee and twizzle toes, nighttime whisper soft and low, schmibble schmabble doogle die, sleep awaits beneath the sky. Mumble wibble tumble near, dream bugs hum right in your ear, blipple bopple tickle twee, hold your breath and count to three.
There was one significant difference between Wanda and Myretta June. When Wanda had been abused, humiliated, defiled, no one had intervened. She had no protector. She was a victim who could be harmed without consequences. Myretta June, on the other hand, had a grandmother who protected her. Even as Wanda beat her, Myretta June was loudly threatening to tell her grandma. And this was not just any grandmother. This was a powerful, oaky grandmother with the fury of an Oklahoma tornado. Even as the two girls walked to the cave, Myretta June's grandmother was worrying where the girl might be. So at best, Wanda the Powerful's time was limited. But it was when Myretta June started screaming. Screaming so loud she woke the crows. Screaming so loud that you could hear her above the traffic on the Casa Loma Highway. Screaming so the fearful grandma could come. That was when Wanda the Powerful panicked. More than anything, she was afraid of what kids all feared, a whipping. In 1947, our parents in Bakersfield had not read Dr. Benjamin Spock and did not know about gentler techniques of child discipline. When we misbehaved, we were whipped. I mean, really beaten. It was not a whipping unless there were real welts and lots of them. Fearing a whipping, Wanda could not allow Myretta June to continue screaming. She hit her again and again and again. Then, she walked over to the irrigation canal and washed her blouse. She went home hoping that no one had seen her. In her psychiatric evaluation conducted at Camarillo State Mental Hospital, Wanda Evans was described as dull-witted, incapable of benefiting from psychotherapy. Her verbal communication skills were not sufficient to do the treatment. Yet, at the same time, almost all of Bakersfield believed that Wanda Evans had intentionally seduced Myretta June, attempting to turn the five-year-old into her perpetual lesbian sex slave. Many believed that Wanda came to the neighborhood grocery store with a specific plan for luring her to the pirate cave and then disrobing her. intentionally seducing, I believe, requires quite high-order communication skills. What's going on here? How can a dull-witted girl simultaneously be thought to have the mental capacity to intentionally seduce another? The answer, I believe, is that Bakersfield in 1947 did not know how to explain the events of one girl undressing another. Wanda Evans had to be psychopath, a term often used by her own father. Others described Wanda as a sexual pervert. To others, she was a deviant. Some even called her a pedophile. After the trial, Moretta June Jones's mother praised the judge's decision to sentence Wanda to life in prison, saying, "I don't want to think that there can be anyone like that going around in the world." The crime of murder, the crime of killing another child, was less important than ridding society of such perverted sexual deviancy. I argued earlier that the crime was more about power than sex. While I think I am right, even if I was wrong, does it make any sense to say that Wanda lured little Myretta June? I think not. I believe the available evidence suggests that the encounter at the neighborhood grocery was a happenstance, not a planned event. Moretta June's grandmother sent her to the store to buy one specific item. Wanda stopped by the store on her way home from junior high. The two happened to be at the same place at the same time. However, consider what might lead to the opposite conclusion, that Wanda intentionally went to the grocery store seeking to harm Myretta June. One such piece of evidence is the reported hammer. When I first heard the radio story, the reporter said that Myretta June was killed with a hammer. I had often played on the dirt mound that we called the mountain and in the pirate cave. We dug with old tin cans. We did not have shovels or picks. In 1947, hand tools were still expensive. No one would have considered giving children expensive tools. My father repaired gasoline pumps at filling stations. He had lots of tools. Most certainly, however, he would never have let me use any of them to dig dirt. Most of the fathers living in Billy Goat Acres had far fewer tools than my father. Like my father, none would permit their tools to be used digging. If Wanda used a hammer to murder Myretta June, she would have had to bring it with her to the pirate cave. There is no other way for it to have gotten there. Bringing a hammer would be a clear indication that Wanda intended to harm Myretta June. However, the radio reporter was wrong. The investigators established that Wanda grabbed a rock. Rocks were everywhere. It was a weapon of chance, not one intentionally brought to bring harm. Some have said that Wanda Evans bribed little Myretta June with the promise of candy. Candy has often been used by evil people to lure children into harm. Nonetheless, in her confession, Wanda never mentions candy. Neither of the clerks at the grocery store ever indicated that Wanda had purchased candy. To be sure, she might have stolen candy and then used it to lure the child. Still, the clerks at the Wayside Grocery knew all of the children and juveniles who frequented the store. They knew which ones were thieves. Wanda Evans was not seen as one. They had never seen her steal candy. Finally, investigators did not find candy in the cave or in Myretta June's clothing. I do not think there was any. "We don't know what, if anything," Wanda said to Myretta June. "We don't know why Myretta June went to Wanda's house instead of going straight home. We do know that it was Wanda who suggested playing in the pirate cave. We do not know whether Myretta June had ever played there before." However, none of that adds up to a planned seduction. Remember also the whole chain of events: Myretta June walking to the store, meeting Wanda, going to Wanda's house, and going to the pirate cave took place in a very short period of time, 45 minutes at the very most. In that short of time, the notion of luring and seducing makes little sense. If I had been an investigator on the case in 1947, I would want to know more about Wanda's older brother, Harry. He is present at every aspect of the events. He joins the initial search. He is the one who suggests that they search the pirate cave. He tells police that he saw Myretta June and Wanda together in his home, and he gives them his address. He purportedly tells his father what Wanda had done. He carefully watches the police activities at the pirate cave, including the removal of the body. I wonder whether Harry had been spying on his sister. I also wonder whether earlier Harry had ever taken Wanda to the pirate cave, maybe with a group of his juvenile friends. A girl with a mental disability would be an easy target for a gang. When the boys in my own neighborhood defended the mountain against the rough boys from Billy Goat Acres, we never invited girls along. Nor do I remember seeing girls among the enemy. There seemed to be a tacit agreement that this was a males-only enclave. So I wonder what was this girl doing there? How did she know about it? How did she know that it was a place beyond the control of parents or other adults? A place where you could do things that you couldn't do elsewhere. I would have had a number of questions for Harry. I would also have questions for Wanda's stepmother, Edith. The first and most important was, where was she during the events? I have a couple of theories, but no real evidence for any of them. The news accounts tell us three important things about Edith. First, in her statements to the investigators, she said that her husband had told her to stay out of the affair. It was all on him. Like Wanda, she had no apparent power in the family. Second, when her husband told her to wash and scrub Wanda's clothes, she did so without asking where all the blood came from. She was used to taking orders without questions. Finally, there is the news photo of the three of them entering the courtroom. Wanda is clinging to her father's midsection, looking ever much the scared little girl. Calvin is wearing a leather jacket and what appears to be his work clothes. He is looking away. However, to me, the most interesting person in the photo is Edith. Her hair is wild and uncombed. She has deep-set, worn-out eyes. Yet her face is what I notice. It is the same panicked but emotionless face that one often sees during manic depressive episodes. A powerless woman who does not question and now seems emotionless. I wonder, was Edith at home but completely psychologically detached from everything? Was she at work? Was she someplace drinking or sleeping off a bout of drinking? What was Edith's relationship to Wanda? I see no evidence that it was warm and caring. Was it exploitive? Was it violent? Or, alternatively, was Wanda the aggressor, throwing violent temper tantrums, abusing her stepmother in physical altercations? We do not know. More than anyone, if I had been an investigator on the 1947 case, I would want to know more about Wanda's father, Calvin. We know he was an auto body mechanic. We know he was at work when the events happened. We believe that he learned about them from his son, Harry, who purportedly told him about them when he came home. However, we also know that when the police knocked on his door, he claimed to know nothing about the events, and he refused to wake his daughter and allow the investigators to interview her. During the multiple court hearings, he was frequently approached by reporters who sought comments from him. He often told reporters that Wanda was a psychotic who did all kinds of things he could not explain. When pressed for details, he would say that she broke into other people's homes and would be found just standing there, not stealing things, just looking around. I have a theory about the house-breaking incident. I don't think it was more than once. My theory does not imply psychotic behavior. For evidence, I point to a photograph that appeared in Life magazine about a year after Wanda's conviction. The photograph pictures an expensive automobile whose trunk was sprayed with more than 50 bullet holes. It seems that a group of Billy Goat Acre juveniles had stolen the car and had driven the car all over town before heading up the infamous Grapevine Pass toward Los Angeles. Once on the principal highway, Kern County sheriffs and the California Highway Patrol officers had followed in hot pursuit, shooting at it. The stolen car finally ran out of gas, and the juveniles jumped out and began to run away. However, within minutes, all were captured and lined up behind the bullet-ridden car. A wily photographer shot a picture of the juvenile lineup and eventually sold it to Life magazine. When asked why they did it, one of the juveniles volunteered, "We steal things all the time, breaking into houses and stores. It is what we do for fun." In the context of Billy Goat Acres' juvenile crime, Wanda's own behavior seems explainable. She probably accompanied a group of boys, likely including her brother Harry, as they broke into a house, but she stayed behind, dumbfounded, and unsure what to do next after the others had left. This is not psychotic behavior. I believe that Calvin used the "she's psychotic" excuse to hide other, more sinister actions. If you accept my hypothesis that Wanda Evans was sexually abused, then, as the research literature makes clear, the most likely perpetrator is an adult male who was socially proximal to the victim. The only adult male who was socially proximal to young Wanda was her father. She had no uncles or cousins who lived close enough to perform such actions. It was either her older brother Harry or her father Calvin. A theory that I have been considering is that her father began the abuse cycle, and her brother and his friends continued it. There are many questions I would have asked. Unfortunately, once the original investigators had decided that Wanda was a lesbian pervert who lured the young child in order to perform her deviant deeds, they stopped the investigation. Wanda was quickly convicted on her own confession and sentenced to life without parole.
Snorable whimsy dungledy, moonlight dances on the sea, piddle paddle whipple woo, dreams are waiting just for you. Zimble zamble tittle tay, stars are winking while they play, nibble nabble fluffify, close your eyes, the world says hi. Wobble wee and twizzle toes, nighttime whisper soft and low, schmibble schmabble doogle die, sleep awaits beneath the sky. Mumble wibble tumble near, dream bugs hum right in your ear, blipple bopple tickle twee, hold your breath and count to three.